Now, from the left coast, another in-depth interview from Peter B. Collins. Peter B.'s been talking about news and politics since Watergate and generously shares his knowledge, wisdom, opinions, and outrage here because his friends and family can't take it anymore. Peter B.'s an independent progressive who upsets Democrats and Republicans as conditions require and is one of the few lefty pundits who predicted Trump would win. This podcast is funded entirely by listeners like you, and subscribers get first access to these in-depth interviews. When you're ready, go to peterbcollins.com/signup. Now, here's your humble host, Peter B. Collins.
Here comes another in our series of last interviews at peterbcollins.com as your humble host slithers off into retirement. My last interviews feature some of the most important voices who I've heard on this podcast or featured on this podcast over the years. And today, Reverend Billy returns to our program. Now, he can't bring the chorus with him, the choir, to a podcast. But did you know, Bill, that your music is on Spotify now?
Oh, my God.
It's so way cool.
Spotify.
Now, this is the quarter of the year when consumerism runs rampant, and despite the COVID lockdowns that are looming across the country, many people will turn to consumerism to try to, I don't know, divert their attention, satisfy their souls, but it doesn't really work. And Reverend Billy and the Stop Shopping Choir have big plans for Black Friday that will be shared with us here shortly. But, Reverend Billy, it is always a pleasure to be in your company.
Peter B., thank you for having me.
To amplify your voice, brother.
Whoa! I'm in Brooklyn here.
Yeah? And do you have your battery-powered megaphone with you?
Oh, yeah. It's in the dressing room over here, the closet.
All times, right? Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Always at the ready.
Now, Reverend Billy, for the uninitiated, please explain succinctly, give us the elevator pitch of what is the Reverend Billy community, how is it structured, and what's it about?
Well, we bring humor and music to civil disobedience. We try to be creative in the way that we approach a J.P. Morgan Chase or a Walmart or an Amazon. Always come in an unexpected way. And suddenly they'll have an unasked-for 35-voice concert in their elevator, in their lobby, in the back aisle, in their parking lot, on their roof. We take our cues from the civil rights movement and act up, I would say, the combination of those two social movements, both of them gold standards in my world. And we use music to calm everybody down, to inspire people. Sometimes it makes people angry because we're singing the right songs in the wrong places.
So do you invoke the late John Lewis and do some of that good trouble?
Absolutely. I mean, if we still have heroes, he's got to be one of them. And he will be sorely missed, but he's alive in us.
Well, I got to meet John Lewis once, and it was quite an impressive event. It was put on by the International Forgiveness Association, and he brought this white cracker from South Carolina who had beaten him up in, I believe, 1962. And the two of them forgave each other in a public ceremony.
And oh, my God.
It was just so mind-blowing, amazing. Billy. It's one of the events that, I'm proud I got to moderate, and I just basically...
you were the moderator.
I just introduced them, and I got out of the way, And John Lewis was just a remarkable man who didn't have any pretensions, but his power was really behavior that he modeled. And, you know, he just was one of a kind and made such a difference and produced so much change for a single individual. And I'm not trying to, you know, project those levels on Reverend Billy, but you've been at this for a long time now, and you present street theater with a political message that is often so powerful. I still can remember watching CNN, and I believe this was 9 or 10 years ago, but on Black Friday at a Walmart in Queens, a man was trampled to death as people were, you know, doing the doorbuster thing.
Yes.
And you wound up being interviewed on CNN, and the anchor didn't know how to handle you. Because here you are in your boof hairdo, and you still got hair, and I don't. I'm jealous. And your Roman collar, and I think it was a white suit, not your pink one. But, you know, she was struggling to figure out exactly what kind of messenger she was talking to.
She needed Peter B. to give her that advice. You know, like in broadcast news, you know, or William,
yeah,
the actor. He has a
was it Sean? William Sean?
He was a leading man for a while there. He had a wire coming up his neck into his ear, and then there she was the actress Holly. I only know their first name.
Holly Hunter.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Was feeding him his lines, so he was like this handsome blonde guy,
right?
And that's what you needed to do with that lady who was interviewing me that year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jimotai DeMoore was a big gentle giant who took one of those temporary jobs, you know, at Christmas, which pay very little because you go through a temp agency that takes part of your money and it's already minimum wage. And so he took that job, and there was a pregnant woman at the Walmart who kind of got in the way at the moment that the doorbuster bell rung and the doors were flung open, and all these people that were sitting in their cars because it was freezing, sitting in their cars smoking dope and like in their warm cars, they all came running towards that door, and this pregnant lady was in the middle of things, and Jimotai went out there to escort her away from this stampede, and not hurt, as I understand it, but he was caught in the rampage of people, you know, trying to get, what was it in those days, 10 years ago, what was that? It was flat-screen Panavision TV. That's
right.
What it was.
Yeah.
And they were there for $92, and you know, get that TV. Yeah, we just felt that we had been running by nothing days, you know, since just after 9/11, and we were the New York arm of it, you know. And sometimes I would fly out to England in the middle of the night after our By Nothing Day, because their By Nothing Day, for some reason, was a day after ours. And I'd go to Oxford Circus and do the same thing over again. But the that always featured trying to keep the hordes back by singing at them with our backs to the door of Macy's at Herald Square and the Miracle on 34th Street. And we would do that for a while, and, of course, thousands of people would stream in. One time I got caught in the stream myself, and I was carried on my back in the air by all these ravenous buyers through the Macy's doors and up the aisle some distance through a phalanx of cameras that were just inside the door. And then I was let down, sort of. I don't remember getting hurt around it. I was on the floor looking up, and there were these long woman's legs whipping above my face. And I kind of got up on one elbow, and I had been placed in the center of two lines of the Rockettes.
So
and
this
I get
was
this flash. Oh my God, shopping on Black Friday in the morning, it's a fertility rite. This is, you know, I got this very ancient hit. My God, what are these people doing? You know, what was this originally? All right.
Well,
that's as much as I can milk out of that joke.
What you just described there was this kind of spontaneous crowd surfing.
It was. I was on my back watching I was kind of laughing. It was a new experience for me to be carried in by the consumers as I'm shouting, "You don't have to buy a gift to give a gift. Stop shopping, children." And by that time, I'm like 50 feet inside the store, and they're letting me down, and the Rockettes are whipping those legs. Amen.
So we will return to Black Friday for a preview of your planned action for next week. You and I are speaking exactly a week before that event, whatever we want to call it. But I want to tip people off that they can get a lot of good information. Listen to podcasts and watch videos at RevBilly.com. And your choir is kind of the centerpiece of a community. And on the website, you basically offer to assist any groups that are having challenges, whether it's social, cultural, ethnic/racial, commercial. And I just want people to take a glance over there at RevBilly.com. Now, you have also recently added a weekly radio show on the powerhouse New York outlet WABC.
Yes. Yes, and it is a very conservative station. It wasn't always.
Back in the 60s, when the Beatles
came to this country, Cousin Bruce was kind of debuted the Beatles in the United States on the 50,000-watt station.
Well, that's when it was a music station, but it became a talk station, and Bob Grant, one of the most racist pigs ever featured on talk radio, was a mainstay there for many years.
And Giuliani has a show that originates from there, and Bill O'Reilly, when he got fired for groping. But the... No, I'm in the middle of the night, you know. I think I'm an experiment. They have a new owner, and he seems to want to balance the points of view a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of showed up, kind of on the phone, kind of talking to those guys, and with a friend, and didn't really have a reason necessarily for being there. Was kind of like it wasn't even networking. It was just kind of, I blundered into it. I was interested in renting airtime on WLIR out on the East Hamptons where all the billionaires live.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it'd be hilarious to be like a local radio guy and go up and down the beach asking, you know, rich women in lockdown, you know, what they think about all the hurricanes that are coming up the shore.
Mm-hmm.
So as they sit there looking out at the ocean, so I thought that was a hilarious idea, but really, really, I don't think it would work as a, when I look back at it, as a permanent radio show week after week. It's more like a Saturday Night Live bit that you do once, I think.
Well, but one of the benefits, Bill, is the WABC has a huge signal on 770, and it can be heard up and down the East Coast.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
What are your time coordinates? You're on Sunday morning at 3, is that right?
Sunday morning at 2 a.m., 1 a.m. Central Time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it reaches out to the Mississippi River. So where, you know, if somebody's coming home from a party, or do we do parties anymore? Or,
well, we've got a curfew in California now, so we'll be at home streaming it.
I think even in the right wing... like Iowa and so forth, but even in those kinds of states, they're starting to not have late night parties or a party in which you social distance, that's difficult.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You turn on the dashboard radio and you might get and the Earth service, Earthaluya, that's what I'm shouting. Basically trying to bring people to the ultimate stop shopping position, which is having a life with the Earth. And talking to people in the midst of the apocalypse is a little bit different now. It used to always be, Earthaluya, this is Reverend Billy, I'm talking to you. The apocalypse is about to happen. We're in an extinction wave. Watch out, children. Get your soul straight. You know, and now the tense has changed. Now we're in the middle of the apocalypse. It feels different to talk to people. I don't have to prove anything. It is that bad.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Let me ask you, because the way that you connect consumerism, consumption with climate change, I think is an important angle. And Michael Moore produced this film that came out on Earth Day this year called Planet of the Humans. And it was roundly rejected, and there were efforts by people who I respect, like Naomi Klein and Bill McKibben, and who's the guy, Josh Fox, who produced the Gaslight? What was the one where he lit the
Gasland? Gasland.
Thank you. The fracking film.
Yeah.
They all circled their green wagons and tried to suppress the distribution of Planet of the Humans. And there are some defects in the film. Okay, I'm not here to say that it was the perfect documentary of all time. But one of the main themes was that we cannot reduce carbon-based emissions and consumption without reducing our own consumer lifestyles.
Right.
And that was completely, obliterated in the, kind of fake controversy that was generated because the sequence about electric cars was 10 years old. And so I'm sure you've seen it, and I just wanted to know what your thoughts were about the film itself, the message it had, and the way the top-line climate change activists tried to suppress it.
Well, I believe that the big green thinking needs to be broken. And the NGO is now receiving hundreds of millions of dollars from Jeff Bezos from Amazon. That is an empire, a very wealthy empire. Bill McKibben and Naomi Klein recently headed up a weekend examining the investment procedures of one of the bad banks, J.P. Morgan Chase. It finances so much climate change. And they were not open to people that basically disagreed with them. There's a closed. My own experience is that they are a closed society, and that Michael broke up that society and declared some of their main religious maxims to be suspect. And I applauded the thing. You know, I like Michael. I think he's got an independent streak that is needed more in that environmental movement. Which has the environmental movement succeeded? Not at all. You know, and now they're accepting large amounts of money from the dirtiest corporation in the United States, or the dirtiest retail corporation in the United States, which is Amazon. They're accepting that money. They're saying, yeah, we are corrupt. So they are locked into the corporations that they are supposed to be opposing. Some of them, it was discovered by Naomi Klein that there was investment directly into fossil fuels to make profits by these big NGOs. So Bill McKibben and Naomi Klein would say that I'm generalizing about the environmental movement, talking the way I'm talking. But we need to be free of that movement to really be radical. You know, the radicalism that is necessary in the sixth extinction, with hundreds of species disappearing every week, with the levels of heating of the planet, habitat destruction, the melting of the polar ice. You know, it's happening at an accelerating rate right now.
Yeah.
And the environmental movement is basically Democrats. They're Democrats. They're locked into a moderation. Some of them might go from Bernie and Elizabeth Warren and AOC. Okay. But they've not done the job. They have to break out of their habits.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with Guy McPherson?
Yes, I know Guy.
Yeah. Well, I interviewed him about a year and a half ago, and we have plans. He's taking me to dinner on Earth Day in 2030, if we're still here.
Well, that's a pretty good question. I have a friend who works at he's actually the producer and editor of Reverend Billy Radio, and Jason works at – he's a sound man at the General Assembly of the United Nations. And he talks about scientists who are screaming at politicians in the United Nations these days. And he kind of performed it for me. It was along these lines. Things are happening right now that we thought would happen 30 years from now. You know, like that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right at these astonished politicians who sit there trying to stay polite, you know, diplomats.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, since you left California, and apparently God is punishing us for that, you know, we get these wildfires that now wildfire season runs from May through November. We finally got some rain earlier this week that makes it nearly impossible for more fires to break out. But it is now just background noise. And, you know, we become accustomed to having our go bag ready and being prepared for power outages to prevent more negligence by PG&E that started many of the fires in recent years. And this cycle is just spiraling downward. And mostly what we get is lip service.
And the news of the week is that Gavin Newsom goes to fancy restaurants.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think that, you know, I've got ties to the Bay Area that are ongoing. Your mates there in San Rafael, David and Maggie Best, and many other folks that I stay in touch with, especially because of Burning Man. I was the chaplain of Burning Man for a long time.
Right.
And, you know, I, like you, want to go to the New Yorker cartoon version of things and say we got our to-go bag and we're standing in line 6 feet apart. But I think that people are going through spiritual changes that are hard to describe because they don't have words yet. A spiritual change is out in front of the ability to describe it. That's part of its definition is that it's not defined yet. So credit your fellow Golden State Warriors, all right? Credit them. I think that something is happening there that's very important.
Bill, I want to play a clip here because you and the Stop Shopping Choir and other activists take on a whole range of issues. It kind of started with the consumerism-related matters. But because of the heightened awareness of police misconduct, police brutality, and the desperate need for reform of our policing systems that is, you know, under the rubric of defund the police, and that, of course, is twisted in ways to undermine the effort.
Right.
And, of course, continue to provide the blue wall with massive support and excessive funding. And so in New York City, the Police Benevolent Association is essentially the union and the dark money super PAC that
right.
Runs interference for the cops. And before I play this clip, and I'm going to include the link so you can watch the video on YouTube, it'll be in the show file for this podcast at goodoldpeterbcollins.com. But we recently saw that the Police Review Board, I don't know what the formal name of it is, in New York City, they just fired four top officials. And this derails the effort to investigate the huge backlog of complaints that, you know, a mountain of new ones were added because of the very visible police excess, the police rioting, the scene in Brooklyn where the squad car drove and pushed a temporary fence full of protesters in front of it when he could have just backed up and escaped the scene. These kinds of images stick with people, and to see so little movement, you know, a full 6 months after George Floyd was killed, and that really did, I think, electrify many people across the country. But, you know, it was co-opted by the Democrats. They gave all this, you know, rhetoric about Black Lives Matter at their online convention, as Joe Biden made it clear that he doesn't support any kind of significant police reform. So with that opinionated setup, here comes an excerpt from this clip as you protest at the offices of the Police Benevolent Association. So the scene is a whole phalanx of cops watching this protest.
We know what policing in New York is. It is a story of violence visited upon communities of color, upon individuals of color, upon nonviolent and peaceful protesters for no other reason than to exert power and authority. This summer, we have seen time and time and time again these vicious, brutal thugs rioting just because they are triggered by nonviolent protesters who have a problem with cops killing Black and brown people.
So, Bill, can you identify that very effective speaker?
That's Jay Walker. We've worked with Jay this year. He's a part of Gays Against Guns, and he's a leader of the Pride Coalition, the Reclaim Pride Coalition, which has a big march in the summertime and tries to protect abused children who are teenagers and so forth who are escaping to San Francisco and New York to, you know, get away from violent fathers usually. And so my first I've known Jay for years, but this year our first working together was we hustled Reverend Franklin Graham out of New York. he had set up a field hospital called Samaritan's Purse in Central Park on Fifth Avenue, right across Mount Sinai Hospital near the Met, and proceeded to start buying his way into, you know, uptown prestige, you know, like the Sackler family, like the Koch brothers. I mean, it's an old story. But his treatment of gay people, that they're going to burn in the flames of hell, he's not quite as classy as his father, but he's got his father's money.
All right, I'm going to go back to the clip here because there's a guy,
okay, go ahead.
A guy in a pink suit with a Roman collar who's about to speak.
Okay. Has cultivated the culture of murder in the name of law enforcement more than the Policemen's Benevolent Association. And our friends are lurking in the shadows over there. What are you afraid of? There's no one over here that has committed violence of any kind.
Why are you here?
Can you say the same to us? Your fear creates the violence. And your fear is fed on by this fascist president. We have to almost make up our peace again. We have to reinvent, recreate the idea of police. We've got to make peace. And that peace will be so strong that they will become peaceful in spite of themselves.
So, Bill, where do you get the balls to do that?
Oh, I think it has to do with being a father of a child and wanting to have peaceful neighborhoods. You don't want to have these people in uniforms who are protecting dirty cops. Like you said, the review board doesn't have the power to Policemen's Benevolent Association hides cops that have more than 100 civilian complaints. They're really all the way to strangling Eric Garner in public, like a public execution. They're like a religious cult. They want their police that make mistakes to be tended to internally by their own community. They don't want to be responsible to the larger public. So the idea of defunding police is that the larger public that is paying in New York, the budget is $5 billion for the New York Police Department. It's a standing army of 40,000 people. Well, they get paid for by us that way, on that level, and then they don't report to us. They're not accountable to us. If somebody's murdered in cold blood, they say there was a reason. We saw a gesture. You know, there was something happened that made that okay. So I think defund the police is trying to say something that is more complex and deeper in a way. It could be budgetary in nature, but we have to have some kind of enforcement of the law, but then it has to be enforced across the board.
Well, and Bill, I really rankle when I hear white leaders and some blacks like James Clyburn dismiss the call to defund the police, saying that it's inconvenient politically. And, you know, the street protesters, the activists who adopted that slogan, didn't bother with a focus group. They didn't ask permission. Is this branding effective? Is it the best way we can present our message? No, it came from inside their outrage and the historical pain that people of color carry and the risk that at any moment they could be pulled over or hassled by a cop on the street in a stop-and-frisk mode simply because of how they look, how they present. And the studied ignorance of people who do not want to confront that and who want to pretend that, oh, yeah, you know, we can have more training. That's what we need, is we need more training. Well, we have to end the whole mentality of shoot to kill. We have to end the whole concept, the overarching idea that cops are above the law.
Al Sharpton started saying quite some time ago, years ago, he said, don't tell me they need more training. Because that is so often the apologia. But the whole movement towards fascism is going on in many, many countries. And you have to ask yourself, step back and ask yourself, how does that happen? How do people find comfort in not confronting the complexity of communities, the complexity of being a human being, and the complexity of ecosystems, of life, of animals and plants, and sustaining nature? It's all one. The slaughter of life generally is not just an American phenomenon. It's what I've studied the most in the United States as far as when I ask myself, why are we killing so many people and so much of life around us? There are uniquely American reasons that is happening. The exodus by, you know, the exodus in the Bible, going to the promised land, killing everything all the way there, and then having your God kill the natives so that you can live there. That's been, some people say, so basic to our going west across this continent. But now, Erdogan and Bolsonaro and the guy in Hungary and Belarus and Duterte down, you know, mm-hmm. it's a movement. Modi,
yeah.
Shea, Putin. It's a movement in the world. Nationalism and tribalism is mowing down the gentler people, and that has to be. We have to look at that and find out why it's happening. And it's the larger COVID, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't COVID seem to be defeating fascism when you look at it in a certain light? The superstorms and the wildfires, and now this virus. In the United States, the dramatic defeat of Trump it seems to be happening under the watchful eye of something larger than the Democrats, certainly. it's amazing that Democrats are able to unblunder themselves enough to win. You know, I say there's a higher power or a deeper power or something going on.
Mm-hmm.
We are in an extinction, the sixth extinction, and the history or prehistory that we know of, natural scientists talk about five preceding extinctions going back hundreds of millions of years, and the Earth wants to live. The Earth wants to make a balance of gases in the air that sustains life, wants to make water that is a certain quality, wants to generate this miracle in which living things come out of solid rock a mile beneath the surface of the Earth. You know, there's something going on here, Peter B., and it has its political side of looking at it. It's not just crazy spiritual stuff from Sedona. You know, this is real. And now, who's in charge? The Earth is in charge right now. The presidency has a lot less power. Trump might be trying to make some money drilling at the last minute or something, but the Earth is in charge right now. And there's no maneuverability from Christianity. There's no maneuverability from capitalism, certainly. We don't have big institutions, even the environmental movement. We don't have big institutions that really credit the power, and I'm going to say intelligence, of the natural world. And I'm appealing to the listener's common sense. Because Earth culture people, maybe your great-great-great-grandparents, there are most of the generations of the human race that we know of. This was common sense. There is a spirit there. The Earth is a living, conscious being. We didn't have to have Lynn Margulis and James Lovelock tell us that. Lots of cultures knew that. I went to Standing Rock because they invited me. I went there and stayed there a long time, you know, It's very real to stand at dawn with hundreds of tribes from around the world, holding hands, singing and praying about water, and appreciating the sacredness of water, and talking to your ancestors in the soil, in the air, and in the water. You know, we have a very narrow perspective that is given to us by consumerism. Is given to us by capitalism and some of the main American mainstays psychologically. We have to now, at this point, as COVID comes in, we have to break out of what we were. And that is the lesson of COVID. Go home and figure something out. That's what COVID's saying. Don't call it a lockdown. Don't call it inconvenient or bad. Do it. COVID wants you to be with your loved ones. Period. Learn love again, Peter B.
Billy.
I just. Hallelujah!
Bill.
There's some preaching for you.
I got to tell you something. you are amazing because, you know, you have this veneer of the performance artist, but beneath that is an unchurched, earth-centered spirituality that is tugging at me, who is a recovering Catholic agnostic, who has you know no patience for the superstition of what I view in organized religion. And so let me continue here in the same vein and ask you this. What do we do about these evangelicals who are wrapped up in Trumpism? They are free to deny climate change because they think it will bring Judgment Day, which they hope happens in their lifetimes. And, you know, there is this, I can't remember the term for it, but the idea that basically we have to use up the earth so that we can go to heaven. And when we see them accept the most obviously corrupt individual on so many levels, you know, morally, fiscally, you know, he is a con man of incredible proportions. And we see people who consider themselves to be deep practitioners of religiosity, and yet they are oblivious to the way they are being led by the proverbial nose.
Well, you know, I was raised by those people, and that's why I dress up like them, to be a white corpuscle and, you know, repel the Dutch Calvinists who raised me. I'm a believer that the earth is becoming more and more powerful, and that spirit will reach through the blue wall and through the Trumpian wall and through the you know, the walls of Jericho. Can I keep the wall metaphor going? the earth is simply life, and we make a lot of money and you know, have a lot of things come to our privilege as a result of turning our back on life and telling people we're life. And that empire is no longer operative. The earth is now and always was in control. And I believe that those Reverend Grahams who, you know, Franklin Graham and all the rest of them who completely rewrote the Bible to accommodate their political partnership. I think that the people in
let's not forget Jerry Jr. and the pool boy.
Oh yeah, Jerry Jr. and the pool boy.
I like to watch.
There's always a story like that going on.
Yeah,
but I think that that's a story in every. It's just framed so heavily by their self-righteousness, you know, but every political stripe has got all kinds of shenanigans. You know, the pool boys are everywhere.
Yep. Yeah. All right, Bill, yeah. I want to shift to preview your actions next week, and I have a little music to set this up. We pull
right.
out Fagan and Becker, the Steely Dan band.
Yeah.
And their great theme about Black Friday. You can bail out the economy yourself. Share with listeners, Bill, that I am so out of touch with consumerism that you and I were, you know, jockeying back and forth about a date when we could record this interview. And, you know, we crossed our signals a little bit, and you thought I wanted to record on Black Friday itself. And I actually thought that due to the downturn in the economy and the drop in consumer activity, that the lords of retail had extended Black Friday, and it was actually going to start today. And I had to turn to your expertise to determine that, oh, no, Black Friday is still the day after Thanksgiving this year.
Well, you know, when we took Zuccotti Park in Occupy Wall Street had left the building. There were no, you know, all that was, it was like the neutron bomb. All that was left was the building. I think that actually some company in Atlanta owned the stock exchange at that point. You know, the hedge fund people had completely swept everything before them, you know, with their algorithmic mathematical equations. But it was the symbolic place. Nobody would argue that we were camping out and talking about radically changing the economy in the middle of all these buildings that at one time or other, you know, were full of traders and full of the stockholders and their representatives, going all the way back to, you know, before the revolution.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it doesn't matter that much. It Black Friday is Black Friday, will always be Black Friday. And they try to, you know, have Black Friday happening 365 days a year. The 70% of the economy is consumerism. And, you know, the greenhouse gases, almost all of the greenhouse gases, something in excess of 2/3 of all the greenhouse gases pass through the hands in the cycle from being drilled in the ground and refined all the way to becoming carbon in the air, pass through the hands of a consumer that makes a choice about a product, you know, about a product, about a plastic product, about driving somewhere or something. So we still have, it's easier to say that JPMorgan Chase and some of the big banks that finance fossil fuels should change their investment policies. Of course, I've been arrested in many a Chase bank preaching, of course, yes. But it's also something that you and I have the choice to change by our small purchases. And that is symbolized by Black Friday. So we've got to use that symbol, and we will be in front of the Amazon. The Amazon founder and principal owner, Jeff Bezos's New York pied-à-terre. He has a 13-story building that he owns at the northwest corner of Madison Square Park, and we'll be there at noon. Anybody from New York listening, we'll be there at noon on Friday the 27th, Black Friday. That's 26th Street and 5th Avenue. And wear black. Wear black. It's a funeral.
Mm-hmm.
It's a memorial for the many people in, you know, who work for Bezos and get him his $1 trillion, who are in his distribution centers and in his delivery trucks, who have contracted COVID.
Yes,
we will have a ceremony for the 20,000 people that are infected that we know of. So,
and then
there you go. That's my plug.
And are you going to march from there? I thought there's a march too.
Yes, yes. When you said the word march, I went to very quickly to my Watertown, South Dakota high school in my mind, marching across the football field, and then I went from there to Nazi Germany, with the goose stepping.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we will be in some sense marching. It'll be called a march by somebody, some press person. I think it's going to be more like a walk, 9 blocks uptown, up Fifth Avenue, under the Empire State Building, to one of the closest distribution center, the main center in Manhattan. And Bezos, this is marketing for you. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Bezos calls his distribution center, which are basically warehouses, he calls them fulfillment centers. Fulfillment centers, which is almost as nefarious as the fact that he calls his company after the lungs and breath of the world.
Yeah.
The Amazon ecosystem is a thousand rivers and uncontacted human beings and people that are being shot and killed right now by Trump's fan, Bolsonaro. His rancher friends and mining friends are slaughtering people because they're bounties. They're bounties. They're bounty hunters loose in the real Amazon. There will be Brazilians with us at our rally, at our ceremony, and there will be workers from Amazon there too.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bill, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. And as we wrap up, and this is nominally my last interview with you, I am going to retire, but I may return to podcasting occasionally in the future. But you and I go back to San Francisco, late 80s, early 90s, and you were the artistic director of the Solo Mio Festival. And that's where I first connected with you, and you facilitated my introduction to Spalding Gray. And I had two great radio interviews with him. He was a remarkable man. And you and I talked in a podcast a few years ago about the deep loss that you experienced when he died. But you really have become a figure, a person I really admire. And I appreciate the curveballs that you throw at corporate America every fucking day.
Well, I have a remarkable partner, Savitri D.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have 30, 35 singers. It's a volunteer organization. It could be 35 if everybody showed up. but we're from all over the world. New York is an immigrant town, and it's like a subway car kind of coming to life and everybody standing up and singing in a musical or something. It's a remarkable group of people, and just being in that group of people, I find that Savitri and I keep thinking of creative ways to go into public space, to go into lobbies, to go into elevators and up into skyscrapers towards the origination of violent policies. So we use New York as a stage.
Yeah.
And we have, you know, Savitri and I have theater backgrounds. Yes, Life on the Water Theater in Fort Mason. Yes,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Spalding would come out. Spalding helped us start that theater back in 1985, just when he was really famous, Swimming to Cambodia. Remember that?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. He stayed. He performed for 5 weeks, just helping this little theater get started. It was the most generous thing, Spalding. Yes, I was one of the artistic directors. I worked with Marsha Crosby and Joe Bullock on the Solo Mio Festival, and then for the balance of the year, Ellen Sebastian, Joe Lambert. I was in a group of people, but my area of special interest was storytelling by people like Spalding. So I spent time in New York and then eventually moved here. But Guillermo Gomez Pena and Danny Glover performing Langston Hughes, and, you know, we just had lots and lots of storytellers there, John O'Keefe. I'm having memories here. Thank you. I'm Peter B. I appreciate being among your curated final interviews. And I will try to live up to that. I'll think of you fondly the next time I'm in jail, sitting there on the cold bench.
Okay. I appreciate that. And how long can you do this? You're even a little older than I am, I think, right?
Well, I'm older than you, but not more mature. It's the radio show is, you know, the raving, you know, earth preacher in the middle of the apocalypse. It's a job, and Neil Young has supported us wonderfully, and we think that it's we're getting more and more listeners for a reason. There's an approach to this time of the wildfires, the superstorms, and the virus. There's an approach to it that is not, you know, just huddling and swearing and feeling lonely and lots of people are taking their lives right now. People are angry at the schools, and a lot of anger out there. There's a message here. There is something to do with this, and it has to do with the survival of the Earth in the time of extinction. That survival is something that we can join. We can become a part of that. We may not be the hegemonic central species in a future Earth, but the experiment of the walker with the big brain, that experiment is an Earth experiment that that has its upside. There's something we can offer. We just have to stop killing. That's all. Peace, alleluia.
Reverend Billy, a.k.a. William Tallon. Always a pleasure to talk to you, brother. Thanks for joining me today.
Bless you, Peter B., and congratulations on this remarkably articulate and stick-to-it career of yours. And I know that you will go on and on. We need you.
Thanks for listening to this last interview with Reverend Billy. Send your comments to Peter at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.